Okay, here we go. Stand by.
3, 2, 1.
The Thinking Atheist. It's not a person. It's a symbol. An idea.
The population of atheists in this country is going through the roof.
Rejecting faith. Pursuing knowledge. Challenging the sacred.
If I tell the truth, it's because I tell the truth. Not because I put my hand on a book and made a wish.
And working together for a more rational world.
Take the risk of thinking for yourself. Much more happiness, truth, beauty, and wisdom will come to you that way.
Assume nothing. Question everything. And start thinking. This is the Thinking Atheist Podcast, hosted by Seth Andrews.
The Great Courses Plus is a magical time multiplier. If you don't think you've got the time to expand your knowledge and learn new stuff, imagine being able to select from thousands of lectures taught by professors who were at the top of their fields, and then you can stream these lectures at your convenience in video or podcast format, on a drive, at the gym, anytime, anywhere. A fantastic series is Dr. David Christian's Big History, The Big Bang, Life on Earth, and the Rise of Humanity. Pretty much the history of everything, but it's consolidated and packaged for those of us who do not have a PhD in travel from the singularity through the cosmos to the formation and evolution of life on Earth. It's a science-based, fact-based lesson that expands and occasionally blows your mind. And right now, my listeners can get a free trial with unlimited access to the entire library, and you can sign up now through my special URL to start your free trial. Go to thegreatcoursesplus.com/Seth. Remember, that's thegreatcoursesplus.com/Seth. It's the third month of 2020. Everybody's talking about the coronavirus.
We have it so well under control.
Let's be clear. The risk to the American people of the coronavirus remains low.
The immediate risk to any individual American has been and does continue to be low.
The risk to the American people is low.
If you look at the country as a whole, the risk is low.
As we said, the risk remains low.
We're dealing with an evolving situation. We're dealing with clearly an emerging infectious disease that has now reached outbreak proportions and likely pandemic proportions.
They tried the impeachment hoax. That was on a perfect conversation. They tried anything. They tried it over and over. They've been doing it since she got in. It's all turning. They lost. It's all turning. Think of it. Think of it. And this is their new hoax.
We're moving at a maximum speed to develop the therapies, not only the vaccines, but the therapies. Therapies is sort of another word for cure.
I've heard very quick numbers, a matter of months, and I've heard pretty much a year would be an outside number. You're talking about 3 to 4 months.
Would you make sure you get the president the information that a vaccine that you make and start testing in a year is not a vaccine that's deployable? So he's asking the question, when is it going to be deployable? And that is going to be at the earliest a year to a year and a half.
We have nobody in this country vaccinated for coronavirus right now. So that if it goes through the...
But the same vaccine could not work. You take a solid flu vaccine, you don't think that would have an impact or much of an impact on corona?
No.
The Obama administration made a decision on testing that turned out to be very detrimental to what we're doing. And we undid that decision a few days ago, so that the testing can take place in a much more accurate and rapid fashion.
The problem with all of that is it's not true from everything we understand. An aide to Republican Senator Lamar Alexander tells CNN that the Obama administration never made a change to rules regarding testing.
We need to be focusing on science, and the fact that this has become so politicized, both inside the United States and globally, so many people don't know what the real news is. They're much more likely to panic as a consequence when cases go up. They're less likely to respond to science. The impact on supply chain, on human behavior, on panic buying, and on consumer sentiment is likely to be much worse this time around.
Lots of information out there, lots of conflicting messages regarding COVID-19. COVID-19. That last clip we heard was a guy named Ian Bremmer. He's an expert on global crisis on CNN. He seems more panicked about the panic, right? He's more concerned about the reaction than the virus. My favorite part of the montage is when President Trump says there's a vaccine coming very, very soon. And his own head of infectious diseases at the National Institute of Health has to contradict him at his own press conference. And then Trump says something about, hey, can't we just use the flu vaccine? And he's again contradicted by a scientist at the table in real time. I mean, it reveals to us the desperate need for science-based leadership and science-based information in this time of global crisis. I would like more than Trump simply declaring, because he has good instincts, as he did just a few days ago in Atlanta. He just decided he was an expert.
I like this stuff. I really get it. People are surprised that I understand it. Every one of these doctors said, how do you know so much about this? Maybe I have a natural ability. Maybe I should have done that instead of running for president.
I saw the article on Snopes confirmed that the Trump administration fired the entire U.S. pandemic response team 2 years ago. It was a cost-cutting measure. Fired the entire pandemic response team and did not replace them. The White House has since asked for $2.5 billion in aid to help fight the coronavirus, and critics say that request might not have been necessary had he not nixed the pandemic response team and implemented cuts to the CDC. Anyway, we need some actual experts, and so for that reason, I'm going to talk with Dr. Nina Shapiro. She's the director of pediatric otolaryngology and professor of head and neck surgery at the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA. She's been on the front lines tackling anti-science woo and doing pro-science education for two decades. She's author of a book called Hype, A Doctor's Guide to Medical Myths, Exaggerated Claims, and Bad Advice, How to Tell What's Real and What's Not. That's what this broadcast is. It's an exploration into what's real, what's not. COVID-19 first detected in Wuhan City, China. The first infections were linked to a live animal market, but that virus now spreading from person to person. By the way, MERS and SARS were also two other examples of coronaviruses that came from animals and then spread to people. On January 30th of this year, the World Health Organization declared the outbreak of COVID-19 a public health emergency. While information so far suggests that most COVID-19 illness is mild, a report out of China suggests serious illness occurs in 16% of cases. Older people and people with certain underlying health conditions like heart disease, lung disease, and diabetes, for example, seem to be at greater risk of serious illness. The symptoms themselves, pretty common in many sicknesses, fever, cough, shortness of breath. At this moment, at the time of the release of this show, the death toll at 3,800 worldwide, according to Johns Hopkins University. More than 110,000 people have caught corona globally. About half of those people, 62,000, have completely recovered. China has more than 7,000 people infected. At least 366 people have died. Spanish officials said they believe the first recorded death from COVID-19 was a 69-year-old man in Valencia, Spain, February 13th, the earliest known fatality in Europe. Spain currently has close to 200 infections, including a 4-year-old girl. Total number of cases reported in Britain, 85, around 250 in Germany. Apparently, a traveler from Germany going to Poland, introducing the first infection there. There are 16 million right now who are quarantined in Italy after the government announced a lockdown in certain regions. They actually closed the Louvre in Paris for several days till management could agree on what to do with all the people from all over the world who were congregating at the museum. There's regular disinfecting of the subways in New York as the New York Transit Authority is trying to minimize the risk. Major conventions being canceled. The American Bar Association canceled a conference for March in San Diego. Google has canceled its largest event of the year.
They postponed the professional baseball season in Japan. Instead of opening March the 20th, they're going to open it sometime during the month of April. The Grand Princess cruise ship has been floating around off the California coast for several days with infections of corona. Of course, I have to stop here and say that HUD Secretary Ben Carson, talking to George Stephanopoulos, gave us all kinds of confidence.
As you know, the Grand Princess is docking, the cruise ship is docking in Oakland tomorrow. What plan is in place to deal with the 3,500 people on board?
The cruise ship personnel, and as you know, the Vice President met with the CEOs of the major cruise ship companies yesterday. And they are coming up with a plan within 72 hours of that meeting.
The ship's docking tomorrow.
The plan will be in place by that time. But I don't want to preview the plan right now.
Shouldn't you be able to do that?
I think it needs to all come from a solitary source. We shouldn't have 16 people saying what the plan is.
Anyway, their plan has the cruise ship finally docking at the Port of Oakland. Americans will be sent off to military bases in California, Texas, and Georgia for a 14-day quarantine. Speaking of quarantine, did you see the article just came out that said that Ted Cruz, evangelical Christian nationalist theocrat and creepy guy, Ted Cruz, said he was going to self-quarantine after being in contact with corona? And because it's Ted Cruz, my friend Alice Jennifer went online and she said, I hope the virus is okay. Yeah. Hope the virus is all right there. That's a contaminant. Ted Cruz is a contaminant, trust me. Did you see that story about Pope Francis? That guy's 83 years old and all of a sudden he ends up getting a cough and a slight temperature. And he has a sore throat and gets chills. And so there was this speculation. Of course, this is Italy. Speculation that he might have corona. So he goes in and he gets himself tested and he tests negative. Meanwhile, in the United States, we've got this photograph of Vice President Mike Pence. And he's gathered at the White House and he's holding hands with a bunch of other Christians. And they're all calling down magical enchantment from on high. A shield of protection for America. You know, it's just interesting to me to see the Pope go in and he takes a science-based test, and I'm sure he would have undergone science-based treatment for COVID-19. And you got Mike Pence, who rejects basic science and is calling down the hedge of protection from his wizard dad in the cosmos. I just found that interesting. Then the Pope live-streamed Mass. Right. Instead of going out and actually conducting Mass, he conducted a live stream from solitude. Another example of religion not being all that confident in God's ability to protect his children. Saudi Arabia has halted all international travel into the country. And that means that access to Muslim holy sites in Mecca and Medina, those have been limited. Now, normally, about 12 million Muslims all around the world make this pilgrimage to Mecca. They're supposed to do it at least once in their lifetime. They do it at the end of the Islamic calendar year. It's called Hajj. And then they all walk around, you know, the circular pattern around the Kaaba. They're just not doing it. God's not going to protect us. We're going to have to stay home and I guess put a block in the living room and walk around that thing. Yeah. By the way, can you imagine traveling like halfway around the world just to walk around a big block? I just don't get that. Anyway, USA Today just posted an article called How to Prepare for Coronavirus, the Shopping List for Your Own Home Quarantine Kit. The checklist includes non-perishable foods, frozen foods, plenty of fluids, water, liquids, a 14-day supply of any prescription medications, also some over-the-counter pain relievers, antacids, vitamins, etc. How about a 14-day supply of toothpaste, toilet paper, feminine supplies, diapers, laundry detergent, disinfectant, other items, perhaps even some board games, cards, toys, books, magazines, and other fun items to keep the family occupied. So there's your quarantine kit. I'm sure you've seen some of the photographs from different retailers, grocery stores, pharmacies, where the shelves are just cleared out. Is this a rational approach? Is this reasonable? We're going to get to that in just a few with my special guest. An article from NBC News, which published today, or the date of the release of this broadcast, world markets tumble as anxiety grows in D.C. World stocks tumbled overnight with investors bracing for the economic fallout of the epidemic, with a shocking all-out price war adding to anxiety. An opinion piece published on CNN by a guy named James Phillips. Let me read part of the article. He said, "I wholeheartedly agree with those experts who go beyond the World Health Organization and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and are now calling COVID-19 a pandemic." Now, for those confused about pandemic versus epidemic, an epidemic is the outbreak of a disease in a community. A pandemic is the outbreak of a disease globally, the pandemic being much larger. I just want to make that clarification. Back to the article. "With evidence of sustained person-to-person transmission on multiple continents, it's time to stop focusing on containment and work instead to harden our domestic healthcare infrastructure. As an emergency physician at an urban hospital in Washington, D.C., this is personal. My colleagues and I will be on the front lines as American emergency agencies will soon likely experience a large and sustained surge of patients with COVID-19 concerns. The public should find comfort that health experts have been preparing for weeks. There is, however, still much work to be done." And then he says, "I will likely become infected in the next few months. It's just simple math that I've accepted. But I became a physician knowing the job incurred risk and that I have a duty to patients and society. Based on what we know today, my risk of getting severely ill or dying from COVID-19 is low. I'm fortunate to be relatively young and healthy. But that's not the case for other medical colleagues who are likely to become infected as well. Protecting our workforce is critical. Healthcare workers who are infected or exposed without protective gear won't be able to work while contagious. Yet we need them to care for new COVID-19 cases, as well as patients with all the other diseases and traumatic injuries that will continue to occur. Heart attacks and strokes are not taking a break while the virus is here." At the end of the article, he says, "One thing is certain, panic helps nobody. Heed the advice of medical professionals, not social media. Trust the U.S. CDC recommendations and be confident in the fact that every physician, nurse, EMS worker, and healthcare administrator is giving COVID-19 their fullest attention." I don't want to interrupt our conversation, so I'm going to take a short break right now and be right back with Dr. Nina Shapiro. Let's talk to a doctor, find out what she thinks about Corona, COVID-19, what's happening, and what we should do about it. We'll do it after this. My patrons get this broadcast commercial free. They get it early, and you have my thanks for being a patron at patreon.com/Seth Andrews. Time to get some medical advice from an actual medical professional with Dr. Nina Shapiro, professor at UCLA and author of the book Hype: A Doctor's Guide to Medical Myths, Exaggerated Claims, and Bad Advice. Dr. Shapiro, it's an honor to have you on the show.
Great to be here.
So you're in the myth-busting business, right? You're a debunker. Would that be accurate?
That is very accurate. It's a tough job, but somebody's got to do it.
Like, there's no shortage of bunk for the debunker these days, is there?
That's right. That's right.
So let's just jump right into the deep end, if we can, and talk about the coronavirus. You know, I struggle because we as individuals are concerned. But as a collective, as a group, human beings tend to be prone to panic, right? Can we start there? I mean, we don't want to panic over this thing, but how concerned should we be?
Right. So we, as you said, we as humans do panic really well. We've really perfected it over the years. And every time we think we have something that we've panicked extremely about, we find something more. So not too long ago, we panicked about Ebola. And then we panicked about Zika years ago. For those of us who remember, we panicked about Y2K. And we look back on many of these and we say, wow, weren't we silly to really go overboard, go overkill with all of this nonsense. And look, yes, Ebola was devastating. Zika was devastating. Y2K was potentially devastating, but it really wasn't to the scale that we were sort of gearing up for. But now we have coronavirus or COVID-19, and it's a little bit different. It feels a little bit different. And for those of us who are used to downplaying a lot of these scares and downplaying a lot of these overhyped miracle cures or, you know, disasters, even we're, you know, taking a little bit of pause here and taking a little more concern, I think, than the usual, oh, just this is nothing, don't make a big deal about it.
Concern with good reason. I mean, we're such a hyper-connected world, right? And that's one of the differences, that, you know, there's so much contact in such a short amount of time. It seems like a lot is happening in a very brief window.
Yes, and it is. And that's, you know, the good and the bad of this is that literally if you refresh your browser, you're going to find some new information about this illness. And sometimes it's positive and optimistic, and sometimes it's quite negative and really terrifying. So, it, you know, I wouldn't say that we are being, you know, that it's completely inappropriate to have some genuine worry, because a lot of the information that we're getting are true numbers. But, you know, as with anything like this, when the information is coming out so quickly, it always is subject to change. And that certainly has been the case with this. So when it was such a small, relatively contained acute illness in Wuhan not too long ago, it feels like months ago, it really wasn't too long ago, the death rate seemed so incredibly high because the numbers of the cases were so low, and the only cases that were being evaluated were the people who were so extremely ill. And so the percent of people who were dying from this was incredibly high. Now, as we are testing more and more people, and this is literally by the hour in this country now, certainly in South Korea, they're testing people. Several hundred people are getting tested through this, literally a drive-through testing now. The percent has been as low as 0.001% death rate. So that's a big difference from saying 15 to 20% of the people will die from this, as opposed to one in tens of thousands of people will die from this. So when you hear such extremes in numbers, all that means is that the numbers are coming out more quickly than one can evaluate what those numbers really mean.
You're seeing the stories about people who are going and sort of grabbing every face mask that they can get, you know, all the antibacterial wipes they can get their hands on, and the stores are becoming more and more depleted. I mean, this isn't the case everywhere, but it's certainly enough of a problem that it's been addressed, you know, as they say, hey, you are actually potentially creating a shortage of these facial masks that may be needed by folks who actually require them. I don't know if you followed that. Can you help me out with it?
I live it, actually. I work in a hospital. So, you know, we're surrounded by people, patients who are otherwise healthy, walking around with all different types of face masks. So this is Los Angeles, so sometimes it gets really stylish. We have people with these, you know, these cloth masks with designs on them, a little bit of glam, a little bit of glitter. And the stores are cleared out of N95 masks. So when we talk about a mask, they're really different kinds of masks. So N95, or another kind is called P100, are the masks that we in Southern California, and actually Northern California, oftentimes have on hand because we're in fire country. So we are pretty well versed in masks. So people walk around after fires with these masks all the time, every fire season. So it's not too new to us. And many Angelenos and people in California have these masks already because we use them during fire season. But, you know, this extreme hysteria, and it is really hysteria to buy all these masks up and, you know, to stock your homes all of a sudden for a disaster, is I could understand because people are scared and people are being told that they may be locked in their homes and schools and offices will be closed and travel will be banned, that that people want to have supplies, and I can understand that. But the extreme nature of people's panic is leading to many supplies, for instance, surgical masks, medical equipment, water, that's being depleted, again, as you said, by people who are going to need them, which is primarily healthcare workers who are going to be treating sick people.
I read just a few minutes ago an article by an emergency room physician said he expects to get this thing. Is that a reality for you? Do you worry about it?
So those are two questions. It's realistic. I do think that I will probably get coronavirus too. Am I concerned? Is it something to panic about? I actually don't think so. I agree with this physician is saying, because unlike something like, let's say, Ebola, you don't really get a mild case of Ebola. If you get Ebola, no matter how healthy you are pretty sick. And that also goes for flu, for influenza. If you get influenza, certainly there are ranges of the disease, but it's never really a mild cold. Nobody says I had the actual influenza infection and all I had was a mild cold. But with this virus, many people, and I think millions of people probably will get it. If not, millions of people probably already have it. And because it's in cold season, respiratory infections are going around all the time. How are we to know about these otherwise relatively healthy people with a little bit of a runny nose and a cough and a little bit of a sniffle and maybe a low-grade fever? We are not testing them for coronavirus, but it could indeed be coronavirus, and they may spread their mild infection to somebody who is potentially a little more medically frail, and that person may develop a very serious illness due to this virus. But I do think that many people, and the vast, vast, vast majority, probably much higher than 80%, which is what people are quoting, I think much higher than 80% of the people who will develop this illness will have an extremely mild form of it.
I don't want to oversimplify or minimize the fact that there are people who don't fall into this demographic who are at risk, but we're largely talking about what, the elderly and those with minimized immune systems, that kind of thing?
Right. So the initial data out of China, which obviously was the largest group that first developed the disease, found that the people who had the most significant degree of illness and had the highest mortality, meaning the most number of deaths per case, were those over age 80 and those with some other chronic medical issues such as immune deficiency, chronic lung disease, asthma such as that, diabetes, other sorts of chronic severe medical problems, heart disease. Those were the individuals who fared the worst. Unlike a lot of these respiratory illnesses, such as influenza, children actually fared the best. So children under, there were no deaths in children under 10, and there was one death in individuals age 20 years and under. So it tends to be hitting hard in the older individuals, and then also individual, and also smoking. Smoking puts them at a very high risk, and there's a very high incidence of smoking in China, and so a lot of the smokers fared quite poorly. Interestingly, and again, this was just in their population, males fared much more poorly than females.
Talking here with Dr. Nina Shapiro, the Trump press conference, you know, he's comparing it to the flu. Are those comparisons accurate? Are they helpful? Can you speak to that?
Yes, I can speak to that. So as far as the symptoms go, so coronavirus illness can look very similar to flu. So fever, cough, runny nose, a little fatigue, muscle aches. So in that way, it's similar. It is not the same virus, though. So, and the other issue that's very similar, it's transmitted very similarly to the flu. So droplet transmission. So it's a respiratory illness. So cough, sneezes, touching your face, touching somebody else, a little bit of transmission through surfaces, but mostly close contact via respiratory droplet. So in that way, it is very similar to the flu. It is not the flu, though. And so although the flu shot is extremely important and the flu is much deadlier than coronavirus every year, a flu shot will not protect you against coronavirus. Do not ask your doctor for Tamiflu or any sort of flu treatment specifically for influenza that will not treat coronavirus infections. But, you know, it's a similar type of picture. The numbers for flu are magnitudes higher than coronavirus already. I think close to 500,000 people, 500,000 people in this country to date. It is early March. We still are not done with flu season. 500,000 people have been hospitalized for the flu in this country. Anywhere between 10 and 50,000 people, children included, will die this season from the flu in this country alone. So for some reason, the flu is getting a very distant backseat to this infection because it's novel and we really don't know what to do about it and we don't know what it's going to do and how significantly it's going to affect us. But the flu is, to me and to most doctors, still much more terrifying and potentially deadly than this illness.
Cue the opportunists, right? I've got some homeopathy. I've got some shark cartilage. I've got a vitamin. I got a pill. I've got a cure-all. Can we talk about the quacks, the pseudoscientists, and the opportunists who were trying to cash in?
They are loving this because it is, you know, they really thrive on preying on people's fear. And this is the time that everybody is fearful. So the opportunists are looking for ways to create some sort of control. And I think this is their perfect opportunity because something like this, everybody feels out of control. They don't know how to control their environment. They have no control over how to protect themselves from this virus. So a pseudoscientist or a quack or you know, whatever you want to call it, there are lots of terms we can use. I don't know what this show is rated, but they will use anything that will supposedly pseudo-empower people for anything. So whether it's a vitamin supplement or a mega dose of a vitamin or some sort of herb or powder or tea or you name it, they can sell it for whatever they want at this point and claim anything, claim that it will protect you from a bad illness. And guess what? Most people are not going to have a bad illness. So then they can say, you see, I gave you this X, Y, or Z nonsense and you didn't get sick. It must have been that. And that's that whole issue of, you know, cause and effect and correlation and causation and just, you know, one thing is necessarily related to the other is complete nonsense. So they are really, you know, they're loving this and they're recommending every frankincense. That's, I didn't even know that was a real thing. Frankincense is recommended for this, which is, I guess, some sort of like gelatin or something.
I saw this, like you mentioned oregano oil and somebody said mainline some vitamin C and I'm like,
sure. Wow. And people think that all this stuff, because it's natural and it's, you know, it's in your body anyway. And they'll use these really nice buzzwords that make it seem soft and sweet. But a lot of these have, you know, certainly high dose vitamins and supplements. First of all, they're not regulated by anybody. A lot of them can be potentially dangerous, especially the supplements.
Doc, you don't have to answer this question. All right. You don't have to answer this. I'm just going to throw it out and see what happens. Okay. Mike Pence has been put in charge of handling this. Mike Pence, and I check this, he does not believe in evolution, even though the viruses evolve. And those types. It's not exactly a science-heavy administration, okay? So I'm just going to throw it out
exactly.
Like that. Okay, all right. I'm just going to throw it out like that. I mean, right, how concerned should we be that we have a distrust of science? And in many ways, leadership that sets that tone, and yet we are in desperate need of science-based solutions. I don't know. I mean, is this the kind of stuff you doctors talk about over the water cooler? Like, holy shit, you know, I mean, what do you do with that?
Well, I mean, I think that the only upside we can have for something like that is to say that somebody who is not believing in evolution and who is not scientifically minded whatsoever is acting purely as a figurehead and as, you know, almost like a talking head up there and can say whatever he wants. But what, you know, the scientists are doing what they're doing their job and they're doing what they need to do. So even though Mike Pence is in name and in body up there saying that he's running the show, in reality, the folks at the World Health Organization, the folks at the CDC, the folks at every public health organization in every city in this country and all around the world are working their tail off to help contain this and help devise ways of testing efficiently and containing this in a safe but reasonably practical way. So I'm a little less concerned about something like that because I don't think that the scientists are, they're just doing their job and they're going to get this done in their way and, you know, hopefully with as little restriction from the administration for them to just do what they need to do. So it seems ridiculous to have somebody like that at the head of this. But, you know, he's not in the lab. He's not running tests on this. He's not making sure that this RNA virus, he doesn't know what an RNA virus is, that it's not mutating. And so, you know, I think it's just, you know, it's somebody to put on television, frankly.
The White House made it sound like a vaccine was just around the corner. Like, oh, look, we have a virus. Bam, let's snap our fingers. We'll have a vaccine.
Sure, sure.
That's not really the reality, right?
That is not the reality. Vaccines, you know, again, vaccines are really important. And hopefully there will be a vaccine for this. But the fastest vaccine that can be devised safely with safety testing and efficacy testing is, you know, in the 12 to 18 to 24 month range. So we're talking about at the earliest next spring, and probably not even until the following winter would there be a vaccine for this, if it's even needed. So if this really does pervade into the population and people can develop an immunity to this virus and it doesn't mutate, you know, the vaccine may not be necessary, especially if they find that so, you know, the vast majority of millions of people have this to such a mild degree. Perhaps it'll be a vaccine just for elderly people or just for people who really need it, just as a lot of the vaccines now are specific, you know, age-dependent vaccines. But it's not around the corner. We're not going to see a vaccine this season. But, you know, the flu vaccine is available, and it is about 40 to 50 to 60% effective, which sounds terrible. That's actually really good. It's better than 0% effective. So, you know, for those of us who can get the flu vaccine and clear out the hospitals and make room for sick people, that's something that still needs to be done.
This is a question obviously coming from a civilian. If we have the virus, we can automatically make the vaccine? I mean, I know that's a huge oversimplification, but how's that done?
So vaccines are, you know, it's very complicated because a lot of vaccines are made in a lot of different ways, and it depends. So yes, if you have the virus, so the very sort of old school vaccine, the first vaccine was the smallpox vaccine, right? So what they did is they took a type of smallpox and actually injected it under the skin of people, and they would have a local reaction to the virus, and then they would build up an immunity. So that's sort of the bare bones, basic way a vaccine was initially made. They don't do that anymore. They don't give, you know, live virus typically. What they do is they take portions of the virus, so part of the proteins of the virus, and that can be formulated into a vaccine to create a local safe immune response in somebody's body. So let's say, you know, if you picture the virus as like this, they show it all, you know, you can see it online what it looks like. It looks kind of like a ball with these little dots on it. So let's say they inject one of those dots into you, and that makes your body sort of block the rest of the dots. That's the way to think about it.
Now you're talking to my language. Like, all right,
there you go.
The dots block the dots. Yeah.
The dot, and then your body will block the rest of the dots now and forevermore. But that's how most vaccines are created now, taking part of, you know, usually protein particles or part of a virus, depending on the nature of the virus, to create an immune a safe and localized immune reaction for individuals. But it takes a long time to make those.
Practically, what do we do? Just wash your hands and don't go to work if you're sick kind of thing, or what?
Kind of thing, yeah. So, what the health system is now being bombarded with, besides the fact that people are, you know, stocking up on masks and water and apparently ramen noodles, is they can't test everybody. And every public health department has criteria for who could be tested. And right now, that's a very small group in this country that is allowed, that they will provide testing for. And it's through your public health department, not through your doctor's office or an urgent care or an emergency room. So, you know, if you have symptoms consistent with this illness, such as high fever, cough, difficulty breathing, runny nose, that's not enough to get tested. You have to also have been exposed to somebody with active disease, and or you have to be exposed to somebody who's been in a place where this disease is rampant, or you yourself were in one of these high-risk zones. But other than that, you can't be tested. So what do? Yes, wash your hands with soap and water. And this is, I feel like I'm talking to four-year-olds when I say this, but it's true. It's not just wash your hands. Soap with soap and water. And then guess what? Dry your hands after you wash your hands. Because a lot of people just wash their hands and then they kind of shake them dry, or they put them on their pants or their shirt. And that's dirty still. So, you know, dry them. And ideally those hand dryers, whatever they're called, those hot air dryers, those are not the cleanest. So, you know, now's the time to waste a little extra paper and, you know, you dry your hands with paper, throw the paper out. Can't believe I have to say this, but wash your hands with soap and then dry your hands with paper. That is the best way to do it. Wash your hands for 20 seconds, which is not that long. I mean, when we scrub for surgery, we scrub for 2 to 3 minutes. So you can wash your hands for 20 seconds before you eat, after you eat, you know, obviously after you use the restroom. And these are very, very basic things that we should do all the time, especially in cold and flu season. That is the best prevention. You do not need to wear a mask. They are not going to protect you, and they look stupid. So put the mask away. Save it for the healthcare workers. I mean, I see these people walking around and you know, they look silly. And it'd be one thing if they actually did anything. That's not going to protect them from coronavirus. Most of the masks are not fitted properly. Most of the masks are not truly protective. And then what are you going to do? You're going to take off your mask and you're going to leave that there, and all your spit is on there and your secretions, and you're not going to throw it out in a sterile container. And so, you know, whatever's on your mouth can potentially infect somebody. So wash your hands, stay home if you're sick. And, you know, I think the problem is going to be, and we're already starting to see this, is, you know, what happens if your kid's school gets closed and you have to go to work? And, you know, are you at risk because your kid's school has somebody with it? So the concern is going to be more when people have to stay home en masse and, you know, everything is sort of on lockdown and gets at a standstill.
Something you had said resonated with me. And let me phrase it a little bit differently, and you tell me if it's accurate. But I think there's a concern that if people panic about corona, they end up using up health resources, meaning that if the ambulance comes to scoop you up, or if you're taking up an emergency room bed, or something along those lines, there is someone who desperately needs that resource who may be delayed in the queue because you're being checked for corona. Would that be accurate?
That is very accurate. And I think, you know, the worried well, and, you know, there, we were really having to say in emergency rooms, you know, do not come in with a fever and a cough, because that is taking up space of somebody who's sick. And you know, there are other things going around too. People are ill for all sorts of reasons unrelated to, you know, whether it's influenza or coronavirus. Hospital beds are bombarded with people with complications from influenza. Still, that didn't get better just because this virus came up. So if you're sick and, you know, yes, it's true, people are all of a sudden very focused on using healthcare resources. And, you know, and again, it's because people are terrified and they are concerned that this cold is going to turn into some sort of acute, devastating illness. But, you know, don't go there. It's really a negative for everybody, and potentially for you or your family member when you really do need something.
Dr. Nina Shapiro, we're going to have to talk again because there's so much fertile ground out there. But let's finish with your book. It's called Hype, A Doctor's Guide to Medical Myths, Exaggerated Claims, and Bad Advice. Now, we just did like a whole show on Gwyneth Paltrow and Goop. I'm sure you and I could probably talk.
Where was I?
We could talk for a week on Goop. But it's crazy how much of this stuff is out there. You know, the alternative medicine has become this behemoth, this multi-billion, even trillion-dollar thing. You know, health and wellness industry, it's big business, and there's so much misinformation. Can you sort of speak in a general sense about what you're up against and how we can perhaps sort of BS-proof ourselves in this world?
Yes. So I wrote this book really based on a lot of my experience at work, but also just living in this country, living in California, living in Los Angeles, And it is just overwhelming, you know, the health and wellness into the wellness industry or the wellness behemoth that we talk about is, I think, something on the order of $3 to $4 trillion per year. And it's basically, you know, just health spas. And that's certainly fine. Everyone deserves to go to a health spa and relax and have a vacation. I probably wouldn't go on a cruise right now, but something like that. But it's just become overwhelming. I think a lot of people have lost trust in medicine and healthcare, and they feel that, as you know, just as the cases with coronavirus, they need to take control and make their own decisions, which I think, you know, which is great. But I think it's really, as you said, it's gone off the deep end, that people have these crazy ideas, and it's said with such conviction, oftentimes by a celebrity or somebody with charisma and a platform, that it's taken as this is what it is. Gwyneth Paltrow was wearing a mask on her flight to wherever she was going last week, and it was a lovely mask, and it was very stylish. And so who in Hollywood wouldn't want to look like that, right? So it's really, you know, a lot of it is, you know, it's very boring to hear from your doctor. It's certainly very boring to read medical literature. And but isn't it interesting to hear a celebrity talk about science and health as if they're speaking with authority, and people will really listen? And I think that has really been for the negative. It's good that people are involved with their healthcare choices and they understand things and are more interested in what's going on with their health. But the way that it's gotten out of hand is, you know, it has been a real negative and a real challenge for those of us who are, you know, trying to take care of patients.
I'll include a link to your book in the description box of this broadcast in the hopes that all of my fellow skeptics will go there and use it as a resource and give it to all of their goop-loving friends and, you know, all that type of thing. I always like to use that line. I think Dr. Harriet Hall likes to use it, but I'm sure she got it from somewhere, where they say, you know what they call alternative medicine that has been proven to actually work? We call it medicine. And I always thought that was a great line. So, any final thoughts?
I know the source of that. I think I know who said that. I think it was Dawkins. Is that right?
Richard Dawkins? I don't know. He may have. I don't know where it came from.
I have that in my book. I have that quote.
It's just such a good line. And
there's no such thing as alternative medicine. There's medicine that works and medicine that doesn't work.
We'll do a show again in the future on some more woo and pseudoscience and whatnot, just trying
to... There's always something else. Who knew?
So I'll have my people contact your people. In the meantime, thanks for being an educator and for helping to sort of help us navigate through this sea of information and misinformation. And it's greatly appreciated. All my best.
My pleasure. It's a great show.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. For a complete archive of podcasts and videos, products like mugs and t-shirts featuring the Thinking Atheist logo, links to atheist pages and resources, and details on upcoming free thought events and conventions, log on to our website, thethinkingatheist.com.